From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM later on tonight. Yep, those Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. Here's what's happening. We continue to follow this strange story in Nevada. A 20-year-old dispute between a Nevada rancher and federal rangers over illegal cattle grazing erupted into an old West-style showdown on an open range this week, as you know, even prompting self-proclaimed members of militia groups from across the country to join the rancher in fighting what they say is U.S. tyranny. What began as a legal fight between the longtime rancher, Clevin Bundy, and the U.S. Bureau of Land Management has escalated now as Bundy kept his cattle on the federal land and that the government has responded by beginning roundups of the livestock. A confrontation teetered on violence when Bundy family members and dozens of supporters confronted a group of rangers holding tasers and barking dogs on leashes about 80 miles northeast of Las Vegas. Federal officials say a police dog was kicked. Officers were assaulted. Bundy family members say they were thrown to the ground or jolted with a taser. We'll keep watching the story. Let's hope it does not erupt into any violence. Websites are racing to patch the Heartbleed bug, the worst security hole that the Internet has ever seen. As sites fix the bug on their end, they say it's time for you to change your passwords. The Heartbleed bug allowed information leaks from a key safety feature that is supposed to keep your online communication private: email, banking, shopping, and passwords. Now, they say don't change all your passwords yet. The company has to update its site first, so you just have to wait it out. The search for the Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 got a vote of confidence Friday that the effort is headed in the right direction, but officials noted that much work still remains. Over the past week, pings have been detected by a ping locator towed by the Australian vessel, the Ocean Shield. A fifth ping that was heard on Thursday is unlikely to be related to the aircraft black boxes. Jim Sanders, of course, has been following this story with us all along. And let's check in with him now. Jim, this story here, I just don't know. I just don't get it. How about you?
Well, this afternoon, the second in command of the United States Navy, supervisor of salvage, you know, these are the people that ought to know, and they're definitely not in on any kind of conspiracy, because one of them, the second in command, got up and said that what the Prime Minister of Australia said is false.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
That's a huge story.
Huge story that they never repeated.
Well, that means this anticipation, this confidence is all for naught?
So far, he said that until they can identify down to a 1,200-foot area, there is absolutely no reason to send the next, the two underwater things that go down to the depths and take photos and whatnot. He says, but it's not that close. It's just for PR purposes.
Are we still holding to our thoughts that maybe this plane is on the ground somewhere?
Until we get past May 2nd without incident, I'm holding to that, yes.
Okay, James, let's keep checking in with you. We'll talk to you next week as well. James Sanders, by the way, wrote the book, The Downing of TWA Flight 800. You know, prophecy loves signs from the heavens, and they will deliver on Tuesday with a moonlight spectacle, as we've been talking about, the blue moon. Get ready for this unusually beautiful moon to grace the night skies next week. There will be a total lunar eclipse Tuesday that will turn the moon a burnt reddish orange, called the Blood Moon. It's called this Blood Moon, and there'll be a series of four consecutive total eclipses. It will be an amazing story. April 15th, October 8th, April 4th of 2015, September 28th of 2015. What else is up in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what's going on this week?
Good evening, George, and as always, thanks for having me on tonight. It's been a
sure thing.
Very active week. This is one of the rare occasions when I'm not looking forward to a lunar eclipse, because if that Hummer is orange, it's going to be one of many that have been sighted over the United States here over the last 7 to 10 days. I really look forward to these appearances on coast, but on a night like this, it's I don't even know where to begin, George. I'd like to go back to last Sunday morning, the 6th of April, Orlando, Florida. A gentleman with very solid background, former law enforcement, former military, experienced commercial private pilot, I guess he is, was close to his home in Orlando. He saw a group of, he estimates they were probably 7 orange lights, and I feel remiss about raising the issue of orange lights again, but it is the most compelling part of ufology today, at least from my vantage point.
They seem to be.
Very good, high-quality video that people can see. We just posted it on our website tonight, just updated the website in preparation for this program. Very interesting sighting, very high-quality video. Later that night, Vancouver, Washington, a woman and her sister were out driving, stopped to get fuel, saw 3 of these, again, orange lights. What those witnesses don't know is less than 2 hours later, they were seen, or something very similar, seen over Aloha, Oregon, which I think is a bit west of Portland, if I'm not mistaken. And last night, a gentleman in East Jackson, Michigan, saw 7 to 8 of these orange objects again, and the reports of orange objects have been flooding into the center here all night long. I think we've gotten 8 or 10 similar reports from Albany, Ohio, Wheatfield, Indiana, Danbury, Connecticut, North Plainfield, New Jersey, although that object was a blue object, and Parrish, Florida. Last report, both I and Linda Howe have been receiving reports of these strange booming sounds.
Yes.
That seem to have no cause that people can put their finger on. Tonight we got one such report from Headland, Alabama, down in the southeast corner of Alabama. A woman reports they heard one of these very loud sounds, and the entire interior of her house filled with very bright light, concomitant to the shockwave from the sound. So if people want to read some really interesting reports, we just updated the website, ufocenter.com, with about 200 new reports that we've received just in the last 7 days. So it's been a very active week, George.
Keep at it, Peter. And if you need more information, Peter's website is part of our Twitter feed. It's ufocenter.com. For decades, alien abduction has been reported around Brown Mountain in Burke County, North Carolina. Now this phenomenon is dramatized in a new film called Alien Abduction. It's produced by Lawrence Bender of the Pulp Fiction fame, Mike Fleiss of Hostel, and it's directed by Maddie Beckerman. In a moment, Mr. Beckerman will join us to discuss how real events were tied into the film, and Joshua Warren will be with us to explain some of the true paranormal backstories here. Joshua, by the way, played himself in the film. And we'll be back with both of them in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let's first of all introduce our dear friend, Joshua Warren. We all know him as one of the world's greatest paranormal investigators. Josh, of course, involved in this new film called Alien Abduction. Must have been an exciting project for you, Josh.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Brown Mountain phenomenon has been associated with a whole wide spectrum of weird stuff over the years. And it was fun to focus on what many find to be the most troubling aspect, the alien abductions that this area is well known for. And, of course, seeing the magic of Hollywood Incorporated is always fun.
And where are you now, in Puerto Rico, or are you back in the States?
I am in Puerto Rico at my Bermuda Triangle Research Base, and speaking of UFOs and aliens, I'm actually assembling a new night vision camera kit tonight that I'm going to be using outside when the blood moon occurs to see if there are any visitors from beyond who are watching this alongside myself.
You never know. Let's bring in Maddie Beckerman. Maddie, of course, was the founder and CEO of Natural Selection, which is a privately held equity-backed motion picture company based, of course, in L.A. He has been an executive produced a number of other films, The Experiment, and he has served as the general manager of the Bulletproof Recording Company, founded Now or Never Records as well. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Maddie, good job directing this one.
Oh, thank you so much, George. Pleasure to be on the show.
When you were putting it together, was there anything there that scared you at all?
I mean, my family have lived up in the Brown Mountain area since the 1970s. So I'd always heard the stories growing up there and seeing it. I've seen the lights myself. I've taken pictures of them. I've witnessed them. It's very real and very freaky.
Josh, tell us a little bit about the Brown Mountain lights and possibly an alien connection here.
Well, you know, last fall was the 100-year anniversary of the first time this phenomenon appeared in print. So we know it's been going on at least a century, probably a lot longer. Brown Mountain is a sort of unassuming, low-lying ridge that's in the middle of the Pisgah National Forest. And for all these decades, people have been seeing these multicolored spheres of illumination sort of floating on and around the ridge at night. No one has successfully explained what they are. They've been investigated at least three times by the U.S. government, twice by the U.S. Geological Survey, once by the Weather Service. The Smithsonian has investigated them. And I've always found it interesting that even though this is just an unexplained phenomenon, if you talk to physicists, they're fond of discussing ball lightning. Astronomers talk about optical illusions. Chemists talk about swamp gas. Geologists will talk about piezoelectricity. People who are into ghosts will say, well, these are the spirits of people, maybe Native Americans who died on the ridge. And then those who are into the extraterrestrial phenomenon believe that Brown Mountain is one of the key bases for extraterrestrial action, a mothership landing base. And when it comes to abductions in particular, there have been a number of occasions throughout history when people have mysteriously vanished from Brown Mountain. But I think the sort of key abductee was a man named Ralph Lill, who was repeatedly taken away by visitors at Brown Mountain in the 1960s. He wrote very vivid, descriptive accounts about his experiences until Ralph Lill himself supposedly killed himself, which is one of those debatable scenarios. And somebody came in and bulldozed his property, his buildings to the ground. And one of the possessions that is most debated and most controversial was a little body of a mummified alien that he kept in the back room of a little shop that he owned. As a matter of fact, there are only two photographs known to exist of Ralph Lill's little alien. One of them was taken by our friend Timothy Green Beckley. And for the time being, I even have that photograph along with a free PDF of a book I wrote called The Brown Mountain Lights, a Viewing Guide at joshuapwarren.com. And if you go there and click that picture of the alien, you can see a lot more vivid detail. And what is this? Is this organic? Is it fake? All I know is that Tim Beckley said it looked organic to him.
Well, and you know the kind of good work that Tim puts in. Maddie, tell us a little bit about the premise of alien abduction.
Well, it's about a family who go camping in the area around Brown Mountain. And as they're camping, having a good night up there, it's a beautiful area, they witness three lights in the sky. And the entire film is shot from the perspective of an 11-year-old autistic boy's video camera. And he uses that camera as his way to connect with the rest of the world. And I actually had a psychologist who I met with. One of his patients was autistic and actually had a video camera, and that's the only way he really saw the world. And so we start there, and as soon as they see the lights over their campground, things really go off the rails. And it's a thriller. It's a fast-paced science fiction thriller. But it's not it's based on reality. It's based on true stories and true events that have happened up there. personally, I think the Brown Mountain Lights, this is bigger than Roswell. This is bigger than Area 51, because you can actually go up there and witness these lights yourself. I think that people will definitely see it. And I've seen the lights myself, and it's up on my website, mattybeckerman.com. You can see a blog I put up there with pictures I took of actually being at the Overlook and witnessing the lights.
Will people who look at this film say, is this real or is this made up?
I mean, it's based on reality, but it is fiction. It is made up. Now, the opening of the film, I interview locals, scientists, including Josh Warren, who's on with us right now. And, you know, people who have seen the lights, and they're absolutely real interviews. And then we get into the found footage aspect of the film. And that's when we get into the fictional side of things.
Okay.
But it is based on true stories. There was a family who went to the Overlook on 181, which is the highway there near Morganton, North Carolina. And as they were parked there, a giant orb came up over on top of their car. It
wow.
then chased them down the highway for a number of miles. Now, the interesting part was, if you interview the family, there was a time lapse between when they saw the light and when the chase ended, and it was about 18 hours.
Missing time?
And it reminds me of the very famous case of the first alien I'm citing, the
Betty and Barney Hill case, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that's what it reminded me of. So that was the most compelling thing that drew me to that. And that's what we based this story on, was these things that keep happening. There's another story, and a woman I interviewed, she had a phenomenon happen to her, and she talks about it in the film, where she was walking into her bedroom, and she was sucked up against the ceiling, literally sucked up against the ceiling.
Jeez.
She then woke up out of sleep. The next thing she knows, she's waking up out of sleep, and her husband wakes up right at the same time. And he says to her, I just had the scariest dream. I was being sucked up against the ceiling. And they also looked at they talked to their daughter who came in the house, and the daughter says, where have you guys been? You know, you've been gone almost a day. So these things keep on happening, and it's all in the same little area. And it's real, it's freaky, and at first, when I started interviewing people, I was a disbeliever. I really did not believe this stuff. And then as I got into it, as I started researching, as I started putting all the pieces together and talking to people, I was convinced that this is real. Especially when you talk to police officers,
that's right.
When you talk to school teachers, when you talk to people who do not want to be on camera but have had these experiences there. And since I've made this film, and actually I went to Morganton, we had a premiere there on the 1st, and I met about 600 people who came out. I went through the crowd, and I held my iPhone up, and I said, how many people here have witnessed the Brown Mountain Lights? And I got to tell you, about 75% of that audience raised their hands.
Absolutely.
And I posted that video up on YouTube just now.
Okay, and we've got a link to your website. Analysts so far of all the venue theaters around the country, and you're adding more and more. It's also, is it available on iTunes and Amazon already?
It is. We're actually number 2 or 3 on the science fiction charts at this point, and it's really doing very well.
That's exciting what technology, Maddie, is doing these days to the film industry, the television industry, radio industry. I mean, it's just really unbelievable these days.
Yeah, it's a standard thing now to release a film. They call it day and date with VOD and theatrical. So while it's in theaters, you could watch it on video on demand. You can rent it on iTunes, and you can rent it on Amazon.
And in the theaters, don't feel threatened by that?
It's a new model. You know, you're looking at one window of marketing rather than trying to break it up into 4 different categories. And when you're doing an independent film like this is, it makes more sense to do things that way.
All right, well, stay with us. Maddie's going to be with us for the rest of this hour. Joshua's going to be with us for 2 hours here on Coast to Coast AM, where we will take some of your calls next hour. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what is going on at the Brown Mountain Lights and these alien abduction cases. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Maddie Beckerman. He's, of course, the director of Alien Abduction, and then our very own Joshua P. Warren, who played himself in the film. Maddie, I was going to ask you, since he played himself, I can't ask you to critique his acting ability. How'd he do, though?
Oh, man, he was great. I mean, he told us some stories that were just absolutely crucial to understanding what was really going on up there. And the background and the history and the legend and how all these pieces come together. And Josh just being himself just gave us a ton of insight. And it helped me as a filmmaker. It helped me as a writer. It helped me really capture exactly what was happening there. And thank you, Josh. I appreciate it.
He is a walking encyclopedia with the paranormal. Josh, tell us a little bit about the abduction cases around the Brown Mountain.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, George, it was a real challenge to portray such an iconic figure, but I did my best. I'm sure you understand.
Yes.
before you get into it, we're going to put Josh's full interview up on alienabductionfilm.com.
Perfect.
So please come and check that out. We're going to throw that up there right now.
That's funny.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing that, Maddie. So, yes, when it comes to abductions, you know, if we reach back into the furthest recesses of the early stories related to Brown Mountain, they're kind of riddled with the idea of disappearance that may or may not be alien-oriented, because these were happening at a time when people weren't necessarily thinking about that. I mean, some of the early Native American legends dealt with large groups of Cherokee and Catawba Indians marching out into the mountains for one reason or another, sometimes battle-oriented, sometimes not, and disappearing. And one of the legends, of course, is that often the Indian maidens would go out searching for them with torches burning, and we can still see the lights of those torches. That's one of the oldest ghost stories. Also, in the 1800s, there were plenty of tales. For example, there was one about a woman and her child who vanished on Brown Mountain. And as a matter of fact, this became such a well-known case that most people in the community felt that they had been murdered by the woman's husband, and they were going to lynch him pretty much, and then he disappeared. And then, of course, if you consider the Brown Mountain Lights, probably became most famous in the 1950s because of a bluegrass song called The Legend of the Brown Mountain Light, and it was about a plantation owner who went out there hunting. And then he disappeared, and so one of his servants went looking for him with a lantern, and the servant disappeared, and so now we see the lantern light still looking for the man. And then, of course, once you shift into the 1950s and 60s, when people started talking more and more about the idea of alien abduction, that's when you get into more of these tales like the ones related to Ralph Lell and a number of other people I've talked to over the years who have told me that they believe they were astrally abducted more than anything, that Brown Mountain is sort of kind of what's like a little miniature Bermuda Triangle environment, and that when you go there, not only can you experience time slips, which, by the way, I have personally on a number of occasions, but also there are times when people experience the sense that their own consciousness has been sort of sucked out of their bodies and has traveled to these lights and communicated with them. And in fact, one of the things that I find so fascinating is the idea that many of these lights might in and of themselves be conscious beings.
That's interesting. Any reports of Bigfoot in that area, Josh?
Yes, there certainly are reports of Bigfoot, as well as other extremely bizarre cryptids, like one called Pumpkin Man. Pumpkin Man is sort of a small, withered-looking creature with a large head that is creeping around campsites at night. You have descriptions of creatures that are hard to place. For example, one that walks upright and looks kind of like a dog. And, you know, one thing that fascinates me so much about Brown Mountain is that, you know, we have the four sort of basic states of matter, liquid, solid, gas, and plasma. And plasma is the one that people know least about. And in the same way that a human has a body that's primarily composed of solid and liquid elements, I believe there are other beings out there which have bodies that tend to be composed of a plasma state. And if you look throughout the history of UFOs, especially in some classic cases like the Belgian UFO or the Bentwaters case, there have been fantastic eyewitness accounts describing these craft morphing into these sort of balls of light that look like plasma. And in Hestle in Norway, where a very similar phenomenon as the Brown Mountain Lights is observed, scientists there have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars investigating them and came to the conclusion that many of these balls of light tend to behave as if they are interactive and they are conscious. And what I believe is that when you start digging into ghosts, aliens, UFOs, cryptids, ultimately what we're seeing is that the next phase of defining these manifestations is considering there is some connection to these balls of light and their ability to morph into a ball of light or a ball of plasma. And, you know, I mentioned the free PDF that I've got available that talks about the Brown Mountain Lights. Well, I also wrote a free report that actually gives clips and makes a case. This is an operational report with night vision footage showing clear comparisons between many of these UFO reports and places where these balls of light are seen bouncing around. And that's also linked up there near the PDF, the Paratemporal Night Vision Special Operations Report. And I'm telling you, I believe that many of these things, whether they are interpreted by as cryptids or aliens or angels or demons or ghosts, they are all tied together by this ability to manifest as a ball of plasma.
Yeah, there's got to be some connection there. And Maddie, when you did the film, does it got that reality look feel to it or not?
It does. It does, so much so that when you had Peter on from the UFO Center earlier, his descriptions of the seven lights in the skies is almost directly out of our movie. Not only that, but the woman who claimed that her house was surrounded by a sonic boom and lights came shining in through her windows, that is almost identical to what happens in our film. So these things are real. I mean, it's very, very clear that these reports go on all over the place.
Do you find that the people, Maddie, generally, and I know this was the movie, but do they seem to be deeply disturbed over what has happened to them?
Yes and no. I think people who are open to the experience and who can kind of connect with it on a more spiritual level tend to be okay. And I've met a lot of people like that who take it on as almost a spiritual, uplifting, higher self type of connection. And I'm sure you've dealt with a lot of this on your show.
Sure.
With star seeds and with people, Octurans and Pleiades and Pleiarians and all these people who are connecting to extraterrestrial life on this planet right now.
So Maddie,
if you take it that way, you can be okay with it and be all right with it.
What's the message you want people to take with them after they see alien abduction?
You know, initially I sat out to create a science fiction movie that shone light on the Brown Mountain Lights. And that's what Alien Abduction was for me initially. But I have met so many amazing people through making this film, and I'm telling you, I turned from a very skeptical person into somebody who really understands and believes this. And actually, I was regressed. I had a hypnotic regression personally about a month ago. And I went down, and I did, it was called QHHT, Quantum Healing Hypnosis Therapy. And I'm not the type of person that's ever talked about these types of things. It's not in my nature. And I was regressed back, and I started going through past lives, and then I regressed back into what I was told from myself saying this, coming out of my own mouth, that I was a starseed, that I was Pojaran, and that, so, you know, going from somebody who's completely skeptical, and I'm very new to this. This is all very new to me.
Yeah, it's coming at you like crazy now, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like I created this film so I could open myself up to a whole new experience. And it's funny to even talk about these things because, you know, this is not in my nature personally to be this way. But this movie has opened it up for me, and I hope it'll open it up for other people. And if you look at it that way, I think we're in some kind of evolution right now because the amount of people who are connecting on this level, it's pretty amazing.
What led you to get this regression? What was the reason you did that?
I went to the Overlook to see the lights myself. I brought my wife with me, and I brought a friend of mine who wanted to come to set, who is a shaman who trained with the Caro Indians in Peru. We sat up there, and we saw the lights full on. We probably saw 9 or 10 of them moving around rapidly. I started trying to take pictures of them, and as I started taking pictures, these beams of light started shooting around us, and it didn't show up visually. We couldn't see them, but on our cameras, our iPhones, both my iPhone and my wife's, there are images of beams of light shooting out of us. There is, and this is all up on my website, on my blog, alienabductionfilm.com, and there's a blog up there I posted. Nothing's retouched. There's actually one photo up there where there's a mist behind my head, and in that mist is a very clear face of an alien, almost identical to a gray like we have in the film.
Wow. I love that. Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. It really is. And that's what converted me into someone who initially started off trying to make something fictional and fun, and it's turned on me now into something that's become such a huge part of my life. And people are coming to me with their stories and being open to that.
Is it almost a docudrama or is it a full-fledged movie?
It's a full-fledged film, but we do have, you know, documentary moments in there with real people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And John, tell me the relationship. How'd you get involved in this, Josh?
Well, I was contacted by Maddie, I believe, sometime in 2011 originally. And he explained to me that he was working on a feature that was based around the Brown Mountain Lights phenomenon. And he was well aware of my work and just wanted to meet and talk to me some on camera about the truth behind the lights. And, you know, I have a museum in Asheville. As a matter of fact, then we were in our old location. We've now moved to a much larger location at the Asheville Masonic Temple, but it's the Asheville Mystery Museum. And he and his crew came there and sat down and talked to me for quite a while about the real data and got my opinion. And I wasn't sure exactly how any of this was going to be used. And the next thing I know, boom, this major motion picture is coming out with all these, you know, big names. And so far it's been quite impressive, the response. As a matter of fact, Ed Phillips, who is the director of the Burke County Tourism Development Authority, said that his phone has been ringing off the hook since they did the premiere in Morganton. All the media were there. And they had two big sold-out theaters the night of the red carpet. And I am so excited when I hear this, because what this tells me is that now there are going to be so many people flooding that area with their cameras rolling that I think we are going to see just an amazing new surge of data coming in. And that's what we need, more and more data. And I also tend to believe, though, George, that there are certain elements of our government and our military out there that may not want this kind of attention. And this takes us down a new conspiratorial rabbit hole that I, for a long time, have seen evidence that there are some very interesting, shady, even Men in Black type figures that are always swirling around Brown Mountain. And I think that the U.S. military might be interested in learning more about the type of energy there so it can be weaponized. And in fact, I recently tweeted an interesting video clip on my my Twitter feed there at Joshua P. Warren of some kind of an object that moves up. It looks like a shadowy kind of maybe part of a UFO that moves up to the sun and starts sucking a stream of plasma off of the sun over a period of 48 hours and then flies away. And this might be evidence that some of these advanced exotic craft are literally using plasma as a power and propulsion system. And if that's the case, it would explain why that not only some UFOs would go to a place like Brown Mountain that naturally makes this supply of plasma energy so plentiful, but also why that entities within the government might also be interested in replicating that system for their own purposes.
Maddie, from inception to the end of production, how long did it take to do alien abduction?
We were up there for about 3 months. Everything was shot on location where the real lights are seen, all around Morganton, North Carolina, Avery County, North Carolina, Burke County, all right in that area. And Ed Phillips, the director of tourism, you know, also told me some stories about a military connection there. And these are, you know, government people who are telling me about this. So Josh is completely right when it comes down to military conspiracies and cover-ups around the area. I definitely believe it. I've seen it myself and know that this stuff is happening.
What does your gut tell you about why this is happening?
I tend to agree with Josh that there is some sort of technology that they're studying to try to figure out. This has gone on for 800 years. This dates back to the first known report was from George Washington's men. It predates electricity. It's something that has gone on unexplained all the way since back then. There's a story, Josh, that you told me about a restaurant in Morganton who were asked to supply 400 meals a day for 2 months in the Brown Mountain area. And they did. And the restaurant owner showed up. They delivered their 400 meals a day.
That's
for
huge.
2 months. Saw two military police, and that's it for that entire time. So there's definitely operations going on there. There's definitely things going on. And Ed Phillips from the Burke County Tourism Department told me he has a friend of his who is a NASA major high-up guy who is up there taking pictures of the Brown Mountain lights and got a really good one. And a black sedan rolled up on him, rolled down his windows and said, "Hey," and said the man's name, and I'm not going to use the man's name because I don't want to get him in trouble, and said, "Hey, wouldn't your time be better spent down, videotaping and picturing the space shuttle?"
Huh.
So there's clearly a cover-up going on there, and I think these abductions are part of that.
All right, well, Maddie, good luck with this film, and you know what? You're getting some great exposure for it, and I hope people flock to see it on any of the venues you have available.
Thank you so much.
We're going to be back in a moment with Joshua P. Warren. We will take phone calls with Josh next.